Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
It's here. The telegram that says we can leave Cuba has arrived. And now we have just 3 days to pack up our things, say goodbye to the family and friends, and get our bus tickets to Havana. Most important of all, we need to ensure our paperwork is in order. Our passports have been safely stored for 3 years, with their prized Spanish visas, which take a whole page inside, complete with colourful stamps and seals, and the extravagant signature of the Spanish consul in Havana, a signature so showy and elegant-looking, it can only be the signature of a capitalist functionary. By contrast, the most important of all the papers we need to be allowed out of Cuba is a simple one-page letter written in pencil, with at least a couple of spelling errors, from the commander of the labour camp where my father has spent the last few months. The letter confirms that my father has worked long enough and hard enough to be allowed to leave. It's the sort of letter you guard as if it was the most treasured of possessions, which in a way it most certainly is. Without it, you are going nowhere. We spend our last day in Banes saying goodbye to as many people as we can, mainly our family, and we do it quietly, no fanfare, because we don't want to tempt fate. I find it hard to say goodbye to my friends in the neighbourhood. Not because I'm getting teary or anything like that. Oh no, Cuban men don't cry. It's hard because it all seems so final. There's no coming back. And saying goodbye like this, well, it's as though you are being sent into the farthest corner of space, as though you are a tropical version of Yuri Gagarin, except that your rocket just doesn't have enough fuel to return to base. Something like that. As I say goodbye to my friends, one by one, I make sure I write down their addresses, and I promise to write, of course, to tell them about Spain and bullfights, and about the latest music and films in Spain and Europe, and about what things are like outside Cuba. I promise them that inside each envelope I will hide a tablet of chewing gum too, because you can't buy chewing gum in Cuba, no matter how good a revolutionary you are. This is only my third trip to Havana, and once again, as the Banes coach nears the big capital city, I'm overawed by the sheer size of the place. I look out of the window of the old American coach to see streets swarming with people, walking or just chatting on corners, or standing in queues that are much longer than the ones in Banes, waiting outside bodegas and cinemas or at bus stops for buses that may or may not arrive. I sense that this is one of those indelible mental pictures I will take with me when we finally fly out on our way to Madrid. A whole city, a whole country of people standing in line, waiting, waiting, waiting. Before we leave, my uncle Rogelio brings out a camera. It looks like one of those bulky East German cameras that Fidel gives you if you're a good revolutionary or a hero of labour. But I'm not sure. We all pose outside the house on the small lawn area, my brother and I sporting our fresh haircuts, and my mother wearing her big sunglasses that make her look almost European. This will be our last photographs in Cuba. You can tell it's going to be another warm, sunny day this 1st of March. It's spring in Havana for sure, but all Cuban days seem to be warm and sunny. Or at least that is the way I will always remember them. The immigration official inspecting our suitcases is probably in his 20s. He wears an olive-green uniform, like almost everyone of any authority in Cuba, and I can tell he's polite but thorough, unpacking every single piece of clothing and then, with great care, feeling around the inside of the suitcases, searching for, I don't know what, hidden treasure? We're not even allowed to take money with us. We stand there and wait until the cases are fully inspected and the clothes bundled back inside and the cases locked again and set aside to be taken into the hold of the plane. We hope. Then we go back to our seats and wait. It's like everything else in Cuba. You have to sit and wait, or more often, stand up and wait. There are other families like ours waiting too, and all the mothers must be like my mother, because everyone is wearing their best We Are Living Cuban outfits. Men in suits that are too tight, women wearing dresses that are way out of date, young girls with pretty ribbons in their hair, and boys like my brother and me forced to wear hot, itchy suits made from what I'm sure is material for Arctic blankets. On the tarmac, I can count only a handful of planes, including a couple of propeller airplanes that belong to Cubana, the Cuban airline. My father says, quietly, that they are all Soviet planes given to Cuba as a gift by our fraternal cousins in Moscow. He then whispers, "I bet those planes are so old and in such poor condition they can't fly." Then, a little further out on the tarmac, beyond the Cubana planes, I spot the plane we have been waiting for. It's a large jet with red stripes and that magic word, Iberia. It's our plane, the weekly Iberia flight that takes gusanos like us to Spain. Let me tell you, it's a beautiful sight. We're so close. As we walk out onto the deserted tarmac, I'm mesmerized by the shiny jet from Iberia, which sits there in the distance, majestic, like a huge exotic European bird that got lost and ended up landing here, almost melting in the tropical Cuban sun. We walk in single file because that is what we have been told to do, except my brother and I are holding onto my mother's hands, and every step we take towards the plane's stepladder seems to take forever. All I can think of is the advice my friend Pepito gave me back in Banes before we left. Don't look back. Whatever you do, don't look back, or they will think you don't want to leave Cuba and they will keep you here, and your parents will go to Spain, but you, tú te quedas, you will stay here. I keep repeating the message in my mind. Don't look back, don't look back. Don't look back. But I do. I can't help myself. For just a microsecond, I turn my head around and look back. Because I'm leaving Cuba for good. I'm leaving behind the rest of my family and my home and my friends and everybody else. And how can I not look back just once? Just for that brief moment, I realize that there's a part of me that doesn't want to go. Despite what my parents say, despite what they have told everyone, despite what I have been saying, I'm scared. I know that I can stay if I want to. All I have to do is say so to the milicianos I can see at the bottom of the plane steps. I keep walking, holding tight to my mother, sweating now because I'm sure that having disobeyed everyone and looked back, I'm convinced that just as I reach those steps, one of the milicianos will put his hand on my shoulders and say, "That's all right, compañerito, I saw you looking back," which means you don't want to leave Cuba. That's all right, you can stay. Now the plane is rushing down the runway, so fast it is shaking inside, which is quite scary, especially when this is your first plane trip ever. As the plane gains altitude and all I can see of Cuba is a diminishing speck of land surrounded entirely by a brilliant blue sea, the little light above the seats goes ping, meaning you can undo your seatbelt, stretch your legs or go to the bathroom. Right on cue, soon as the little light goes off, there's this great communal sigh of relief inside the plane, and everyone on board, I swear, starts talking at once and waving their arms around and acting just like normal Cubans. "Portofin," I can hear my father say to no one in particular. At last! And his face is the face of a man who can finally relax. No matter what happens next, he's not being sent back to Cuba. Later, the air hostesses come around with a tray of cigarettes, American cigarettes. I watch my father light up, take a deep puff, look at the cigarette in his hand. "This is a Chesterfield," he says to my mother across the aisle, and then give a little smile, because it has been a long time since he had had a capitalist cigarette. "And capitalist cigarettes taste a lot better," he says, "than Cuban socialist cigarettes, which are called populares and have no filter and precious little tobacco inside their thin paper wrappers. I know what this means. It means that from now on until the end of time, my parents will compare everything to how it used to be in Cuba, for better or worse. Some of the gusanos on board clap when the plane touches down in Madrid, or they make the sign of the cross, which is not very revolutionary, I know, but which makes me think they must be just as relieved as my mother is that we're now, finally, on firm ground. In the longer term, our plan is to apply to migrate to the United States and join my aunt and uncle in New York as soon as possible. It's what most Cubans do when they leave Cuba, no matter where they go. They make their way to the United States, preferably to Miami, which is hot and steamy and bright, just like Cuba, except they have air conditioning. In truth, we have no idea how long we will have to wait in Spain or how we will manage. As we get ushered into the terminal, we all notice just how cold it is. It's March. In fact, the coldest March for years, as we discover later. And the suits my mother had made for my brother and me, and which we hated so much because they were hot and itchy in Havana, are now useless against the cold. It must be quite a sight, this plane load of Cuban gusanos, happy and sad at the same time, for having left their homeland and now exposed to the brutally cold reality of what is supposed to be a European spring. But I'm too busy just looking around me to notice the cold. It's truly like another world in the terminal. Huge room with people everywhere, even though I'm sure it must be well past midnight. I can't believe how many cars and buses there are on the road, even at this time of night. Haven't these people heard of petrol rationing? As we drive into the centre of the city, there are even more cars, and we go past fountains made of white marble that sprout water jets high up into the sky, and enormous billboards with flashing lights. To my surprise, they are advertising soft drinks and refrigerators and banks, and there's not a single revolutionary slogan to be seen. When we get to the migration centre, the Spanish officials waiting to place big stamps on our passports. And others, Spaniards and Cubans like us, who help you find accommodation for the night. And my father queues to get his papers signed and finalized. And because he's Cuban, and this is what happens when you are Cuban, he reaches the head of the queue and finds that the man who's at the desk sorting out the paperwork is someone he knows. His name is Francisco, and he's from Holguín, the city where my father lived as a young man. Now my father is talking to Francisco as if they have known each other forever, which they probably have. Now, I'm really tired, but Francisco just keeps talking. Migrating to the United States won't be easy, he's telling my parents as he sorts out the paperwork. You know, he says, there's a long wait, probably 2 years, because there's only a limited number of visas every year for Cubans. And it's not that easy finding jobs here in Spain when you're in exile, you know. If you want my advice, he says, not waiting to see whether we do, because he's Cuban and Cubans give you advice even when you don't ask for it. My advice, he says, is to go somewhere else instead of El Norte. Go to a place that needs migrants, a place with a great future, where they welcome you with open arms. If it wasn't for the fact that my wife's still in Cuba and I'm waiting to get permission for her to leave, I'd pack up my bags tomorrow, he adds. What are you talking about? My father asks Francisco. What's this place you're talking about? Australia, mi socio, Francisco says. Go to Australia. That's another story. Now, I just want to go to bed.
Listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. all the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.